Listen up, fantasy baseball friends. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live MLB draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code Felsky. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using the promo code Felsky, F-E-L-S-K-E. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it, they're even offering Hittin' Season listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and play free right now with the promo code Felsky. Void where prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days.
Swing a long drive! There it is! Number 500! The career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith!
Oh, yes! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout! Yeah. Rollins ball near third! This game is over!
It is out of here! 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Helen.
Knows that Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 203. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and NumberFire.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Instagram as well. Coming up, I'm going to talk to Jay Floyd, who owns the website foulballs.com. That's P-H-O-U-L-B-A-L-L-Z.com. He's one of the most knowledgeable experts on the Phillies farm system, and we're going to take a deep dive into some of the minor league players that you have been hearing the most about and talking the most about, and he's going to give me one or two guys who you may not know a lot about. We're going to talk about that coming up here in just a few minutes. We're also going to talk about the Phillies series in Arizona and what lies ahead for this team here over the next couple of weeks. And are you going to get another Hittin' Season top 10? I'm going to give you the power rankings as I see them, just my personal opinion of the top 10 teams in baseball, plus I will have your stat of the week. But first, just a reminder, folks, if you haven't done so already, to please subscribe to this fine podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, wherever it is that you like to listen to your podcast. Leave a review. 5-star ratings always help if you like the show. And if you want more Phillies content, make sure you go to patreon.com/hittin'season. Hittin' Season has a Patreon, and we offer two extra Phillies podcasts a week, a second version of this show that airs on Sunday nights called Hittin' Season, and then an episode of Continued Success every week with Justin Clue and Liz Rocher talking about the Phillies. We're looking at 93 and 2008, but also talking about baseball as it stands right now. It's a really good show. You should absolutely check it out if you haven't already. Become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season. All right, well, let's talk about this Arizona series, guys. The Phillies lost 2 out of 3. It wasn't pretty. It was not a good series. They actually should have won 2 out of 3. They blew the first game after having a 2-0 lead in the 9th inning. Sir Anthony Dominguez can't hold the lead. We'll talk about Sir Anthony here in just a minute. But after losing 2 out of 3, the Phillies now hold a 1-game lead on the Atlanta Braves in the National League East and a 5.5-game lead on the Washington Nationals. The Nats and the Braves split a 4-game series this week in the nation's capital, which I got to say is probably the best outcome. I wasn't really sure who to root for in that series, because if the Braves end up winning 3 out of 4 or they sweep the Nationals, you pretty much bury the Nationals and you make it a 2-team race between the Braves and the Phillies. But had that happened, the Braves would probably have a 1 or 2-game lead on the Phillies right now. That wouldn't be very good. But if the Nationals go ahead and they take 3 out of 4 or they sweep the Braves, well, now all of a sudden the Nats are breathing fire. They have new life. And I still think they have the most talent of any team in this division. Now you're looking at a raging wild beast coming at you here in mid-August and September. There is still a lot of season left to be played, and if the Nationals trim that lead down to two or three, if they had done that this week, things would have gotten a whole lot tighter. Sure, you might have dropped the Braves back, and the Phillies might have a bigger lead right now, but you'd be incurring the wrath of the Nationals. And so I'm kind of glad the two teams split. There were games in which neither team looked very good. Frankly, the National League East is filled with three flawed teams, and this is going to go down. I think all three teams will be in the conversation for the rest of the season, or at least until these teams start to go head-to-head in September, and that is what's coming. We're going to go over the schedule here again in just a few minutes, but the Phillies, the Nats and the Braves did the Phillies a favor by splitting a four-game series, and now the schedule for the Braves and the Nationals don't get any easier this weekend. The Nationals have to travel to Chicago to play the Cubs for a three-game series, and the Braves have to go back home and host a series against the Milwaukee Brewers. So both those clubs are facing potential playoff teams in the NL Central, while the Phillies now move on to play the San Diego Padres out in California. West Coast trips are always tough, but the Padres are not a great team, and the Phillies really should be able to handle business, and frankly, they need to handle their business, and I'll get into that more here in just a second. But first, again, let's recap this Arizona series. Sir Anthony Dominguez blows that 2-0 lead in the opener, and there are some concerns about Sir Anthony Dominguez now. Remember, this is a guy who came into the season with 3 innings total in his career at AAA. The Phillies were not counting on Sir Anthony Dominguez to be a Rookie of the Year candidate this year. They probably were not even expecting him to be anything more than a September call-up this year. So what he has already given this team is gravy. But they have been relying on him as the most stable arm in the bullpen, the most electric arm in the bullpen, to be the guy to get the biggest outs when it mattered. And whether that was in the 7th inning or the 8th inning, or lately, he has been the closer. He has been the 9th inning guy most of the time. And in the first game against Arizona, it was the second night of back-to-back nights for Sir Anthony Dominguez, and that is where the young hurler has been encountering problems so far in his brief major league career. He almost never gives up a hit, never gives up a walk when he is fresh, when he's had at least one day off. When he is pitching in the second game of back-to-backs, it's not pretty. He has an ERA, I believe it's over 7, and I'm going to look it up as I'm talking here. But Sir Anthony Dominguez definitely struggles more in the second games of back-to-back, and that can create a problem here in the month of August and September, because you're going to really want to have your best players, you're going to want to have your best bullpen arms available to pitch on back-to-back nights. You're going to want these guys, some of these guys might have to pitch 2 or 3 games in a row. And if you can't depend on Sir Anthony Dominguez to get the last 3 outs of a 9th inning because he pitched the night before, well, that can be a problem. And so another arm is going to have to step up in the late innings, and Pat Nashak appears to be one of those guys who is doing it. Tommy Hunter has pitched well of lately. One of the guys who, frankly, does not get talked enough about is Victor Arano and the job that he does in the back of the bullpen. And some reinforcements will undoubtedly be on the way in September. We're going to get into a couple of those also in just a minute. But I found the stat that I was looking for. With at least one day of rest between appearances, Sir Anthony Dominguez has a 0.81 ERA and has held opponents to a 1.19 batting average. He has a 41-5 strikeout-to-walk ratio. When he has no day's rest, which means he's in the second game of a back-to-back, a 9.82 ERA. Opponents are hitting 2.90 off of him, 11 strikeouts, and 8 walks. And Brad Lidge told him something interesting. After that first game of the series in Arizona, he was blowing his fastball by Arizona hitters. But he felt like on the home run that he gave up to David Peralta that drew the Diamondbacks to within 2-1, he told Brad that he felt that he had to show them something different. And Lidge was like, no, man, if they can't hit your fastball, keep throwing that thing until they show you they can hit it. And it's all part of the maturation process. It's all part of the learning process here for Sir Anthony Dominguez as he moves forward here in a pennant race, learning how to be a late-inning reliever and a closer, trying to lock down these leads. So a little bit of concern about Sir Anthony Dominguez. He's never done relief pitching before this year. So he's learning how to do this. He's going through the process of learning what it means to pitch on back-to-back nights. Hopefully he'll figure it out here as the season moves along. as these games continue to get to be tight, as we remain just one or two games up or one or two games behind Atlanta or Washington in the division, every game is crucial. The Phillies did bounce back like they have all year long and won the second game of the series 5-1. Cesar Hernandez with one of the more entertaining plays of the season, a little league home run on a bunt. He bunted a ball down the third baseline. The third baseman threw it away as he was running from first to third on the throwaway as the fielders were chasing the ball away. Steven Souza Jr. hurled the ball from right field way over the third baseman's head, trying to throw Hernandez out. Hernandez waltzes home on a ball that didn't travel more than 40 feet away from home plate. It was really a fun play. Nick Williams hit a homer in that game. He continues to be one of the few hot hitters in this lineup. Moved up to the number three spot in the order, which I really like. He's been doing well there. I think you're seeing with Gabe Kapler, he's a hot hand guy. If the guy's doing well, if he's a hot hitter, move him up. Odubel Herrera is struggling, move him down to six. I like that. I think that's a smart move, and it paid dividends in Game 2. And Nick Pivetta, with his second straight strong start, six innings, no earned runs allowed in the second game of the series. The Phillies just got wiped out in the third game, 6-0. Vince Velasquez, this could be the big story that comes out of Arizona, and we're going to have to kind of wait and see how he looks in his next start. The fastball for Vince averaged 93 miles an hour. He's averaged no less than 94.2 miles an hour in every start so far this season, with the exception of the start on Wednesday. Again, 93 miles an hour, he generated only two swings and misses in the entire outing. That is not like Vince Velasquez. He really got knocked around, and he had been brilliant since mid-June. He had been one of the four or five best pitchers since mid-June, ERA-wise. Is there an injury? That's the worry. If it's just a tired arm, they can put him on the 10-day disabled list, let Eniel De Los Santos, let Ranger Suarez come up, take one of his starts for him, and then get Vince back in there. That's what the 10-day DL allows teams to do now, is let their pitchers get a little bit of a blow. I had mentioned this a couple weeks ago, leading up to the trade deadline, why I thought the Phillies might need another starting pitcher. Guys like Vince Velasquez, who last year suffered an injury and have been healthy so far this year, have already passed their innings totals from last season. And so they're reaching levels they've never reached before, especially when you talk about how stressful many of these innings are. When you're a team in a pennant race, this isn't like you're rebuilding. You know, the games in August and September the last few years, they haven't mattered. It didn't matter if the Phillies won. It didn't matter if the Phillies went out and beat the Padres over the next three nights. But the Phillies need to sweep this series in San Diego. They really do, if they want to put some distance between themselves and the Braves and the Nationals. So these games are really important, and Vince Velasquez is going to be putting up some stressful innings over the next couple months. So is Nick Pivetta. Frankly, so is Aaron Nola and Zach Eflin. All these guys are going to be passing innings totals that they've ever thrown before. And we're just going to kind of have to see how their arms respond. Hopefully it was just a dead arm, one bad start for Vince Velasquez. But given his history, given his track record, the worry there is there that he's got an injury. At least the worry is there. So I'm speaking for myself. I have not seen any reports from the Phillies or anybody that they are worried. I am concerned. Whenever you see a velocity drop, it's always a concern. Whenever you see a pitcher swing and miss, disappear for a start, it's always a concern. We've seen Vince Velasquez have blowups before. He gave up 10 runs to the Brewers right before he went on this 8-start streak where he was unhittable. So it happens to him. We'll just have to kind of see whether or not it lingers into some moving starts. But that to me is the biggest news moving forward out of that series was the way Velasquez pitched. Lately, the Phillies pitching has been dominant. They just went through a stretch up until that Velasquez start where they had been virtually unhittable. Phillies pitching since July 1st. Their bullpen has a 2.70 ERA, which is the best in baseball. The starters have a 3.26 ERA. That is third best in baseball. Again, that's since July 1st. It is August 9th. We're talking way over a month worth of performance here from the pitching staff. And before the game on Wednesday, the starters had a 1.47 ERA in their previous eight games. Eight games in a row, a 1.47 ERA, quality starts down the line, 55 innings total, 45 strikeouts, 7 walks, 35 hits, and 2 sterling starts by two guys. This team needs to do this if they're going to continue on here. Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta, they have been lights out over their last few starts. That's why the Phillies got Jake Arrieta, to pair him with Aaron Nola, to be this guy. I said it a few weeks ago, if Jake Arrieta can be a guy who locks in his mechanics and he can start to locate his pitches, He's as good as any pitcher in baseball. We saw that in the second half last year with him. Arrieta is a mechanics guy. If his mechanics are even just a little bit out of whack, his pitches are just a little bit off the plate, they're not getting the corners, he's not getting the calls, he's not generating weak contact, Arrieta's a very different pitcher. When he's locked in, though, he can get locked in for 2 or 3 months and be a guy with a 2 ERA. So I really hope that's what we're going to get from Jake Arrieta here moving on. But he has been terrific here in July and in the early part of August. The Phillies' offense, however, up and down to say the least. Mostly down, even during the little winning streak that they went on, the five-game winning streak that they had. The offense did pretty well in their four-game sweep of the Marlins in Philadelphia, 23 runs in that game, although they did struggle at times. Here's the thing that is frustrating about the offense. They play for the big inning. This is not a team that wants to score one run here and two runs there and one run here. They want to go for the 4 or the 5 run inning. And there are lots of games where 6 innings will go by, 7 innings will go by, where it doesn't look like they're doing anything. And then they start to generate a little bit of a rally. They start to generate a little bit of offense. We saw that in the Michael Franco walk-off home run game. They didn't do anything until the bottom of the ninth. And then they got a big inning together. They don't have any 300 hitters on this team. There aren't many 300 hitters to go around in baseball, but they don't have a lot of guys who can string together some hits. They walk, they try to get on base, and then they try to hit the 3-run homer. That's how this team is, and it can lead to a lot of frustrating games, and it can lead to a lot of streakiness. So after that 23-run outburst in the 4-game sweep of the Marlins in Philadelphia, they went into Arizona, and against some good pitching and a better opponent, scored just 7 runs in 3 games, 5 of those in the second game. They got shut out in the 3rd game and only scored 2 in the 1st game. And the Phillies' struggles on the road this year are evident, especially offensively. At home, the team is only batting .238 at home. That's the 3rd worst mark in the National League, but they have a .738 OPS at home. That's 6th best in the National League, and that's because they slug the ball in their home ballpark. A .417 slugging percentage. Away, they slug just .374. So their away batting average is .234, and their away OPS is .692. Compare the home OPS of .738, which again is 6th best in the National League, to .692, which is 11th best in the National League. That is what has led mostly to their road record of 26-32. They are the only contending team in the National League with a losing record on the road. That's not good. You got to be able to win more road games if you want to win the division. But I guess I'll counter that. If you're not going to be a good road team, if you're going to be under .500, then you better be the very best home team in baseball. And luckily for the Phillies, they are the very best home team, at least in the National League. 20 games over .500, I believe, is what they are. I'll have to double check that. But I believe when I last looked, they were 38-18 at home. So, the Phillies have the best home record, the best home field advantage in baseball, and they need it right now. If they're not going to win these road games, they better start sweeping more opponents at home and making up ground there. One other thing I'll note about the offense as I was digging around some of the numbers is the problem with this team, at least in August so far, and really this has been a season-long struggle, it's not that they're not hitting well with runners in scoring position. In August, they have a .270 batting average with runners in scoring position. That was in the top half of the National League. The problem is that they've had very few chances with runners in scoring position. They have had just 45 plate appearances with runners in scoring position in the month of August. That's the 4th fewest in all of baseball. 27th out of 30 major league teams. And they are 22nd in the number of plate appearances with runners in scoring position in baseball this year. They just don't get a lot of runners on base. You'd think with a walk rate as high as theirs is, and it again is still just 2nd to the Dodgers in the National League, that they would have more opportunities. But the fact remains, they don't. They don't get a ton of opportunities with runners in scoring position. Looking by the numbers, 45 plate appearances in August, 4th fewest in baseball, and they're 22nd in the number of plate appearances in baseball this year with runners in scoring position. So, we have some roster roster moves the team is going to be making here over the next couple of days. It looks like by the time you hear this podcast, J.P. Crawford will be returning to the team. Aniel De Los Santos has already been sent back to AAA. And the scuttlebutt as I'm recording this on Thursday night is that it will be J.P. Crawford who returns to the team on Friday. J.P. Crawford has struggled during his rehab assignment. As I record this, He was hitting 143 in 42 at-bats rehabbing in Clearwater. Okay, folks, that's high A minor league baseball. And he's been drawing some walks, but Crawford hitting just 143 in 42 at-bats. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but believe me, I've been hearing it a lot on Twitter about how much he has struggled in the minors with his batting average and how bad it's been in the majors. I think he's better than his batting average would indicate, but I'm not going to lie to you and say a 143 batting average in Clearwater and 42 rehab at-bats does not exactly instill confidence. They would be bringing up Crawford for his defense, which also has to improve. He's had trouble throwing the baseball this year when he's been in the lineup. But here's the most amazing thing about Crawford. He has only played in 11 more games this year than he did last year when he was just a September call-up. He's only played in 11 additional games this year than he did all of last year. This really just feels like a lost season for J.P. Crawford. Thankfully, he's young. Still just in his age 22 season. I don't think we're going to see, as I've heard a lot of people say, that Scott Kingery be sent down, even though, man, it's hard to justify keeping Scott Kingery on this team. He has not gotten a hit since Asdrubal Cabrera was acquired by the Phillies. I really thought Kingery would start to turn it around. I really thought he would start to get better. It is not getting any better. He has a 588 OPS this year. 158 hitters qualify for the batting title. His OPS is 156th. And just going to throw a name at you here. Kingery has a 588 OPS. Steve Jeltz had a career OPS of 576. Kingery's is 12 points higher, but what we are seeing from Kingery is classic Steve Jeltz, for those of you who remember who that guy was. And he's not a whole lot better than what Michael Martinez used to do on a yearly basis. Nobody was as bad as Minimart. But, and I know I hate to speak ill of Michael Martinez, but I'm going to do it. But not even Kingery has been as bad as that. But Kingery has been one of the worst baseball players in the majors. His defense at shortstop has gotten better. And frankly, the Phillies needed him to play shortstop defensively once J.P. Crawford went down. They didn't have a better option. Not with Valentin and Flormon both being hurt. And so Kingery has had to do all this while learning a new position and learning how to hit major league pitching. It has not been an easy transition. I still think that when Kingery gets to second base full time, which I think will happen next year, I think 2019 is going to be a much better season for Scott Kingery. But right now, I would not argue if he was sent down to the minors for a couple of weeks until the September call-ups are brought up. And we've been seeing Carlos Santana, Odubel Herrera, and Cesar Hernandez in month-long slumps. You know, this team just can't get more than 2 to 3 players hot at the same time. They just are having the hardest time doing that. They cannot get more than 2 or 3 players hot at the same time, and that has been a real problem for the Phillies. But the team has a chance to turn the page. They have a chance to move on past the Arizona Diamondbacks and take on a Padres team that is struggling. Granted, it's on the road in San Diego, but the Phillies, if they want to separate themselves, just give themselves a little more breathing room, they really need to sweep the Padres and take advantage of the fact that the Nationals and the Braves are going to have their hands full this weekend against two playoff teams in the Cubs and the Brewers. So Phillies really need to come through in San Diego this weekend.
This ball is out of here.
Well, obviously, with the Phillies doing so well this season, we haven't really had a chance to talk much about the minor leagues. Last year, when we were doing this podcast, we talked about the minors a lot because we were trusting the prospects. And now, all those prospects we were trusting, they're now in the major leagues, and we're trusting them up at the major league level. So we have been remiss to pay a lot of attention to the minors on the show a lot this year because the big club has been doing so well and so many storylines with the Phillies. But I wanted to dip back into the minor league guys as the season is wrapping up down on the farm. And joining me is one of the most knowledgeable guys on the Phillies farm system. He runs the website foulballs.com, and that's foulballz.com. The great Jay Floyd is joining Hittin' Season. Jay, welcome back to the show. How are you, buddy?
John, I'm great, man. Great to talk with you. Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk to you, too, again. And, again, you can follow Jay on Twitter at foulballz. Again, that's P-H-O-U-L-B-A-L-L-Z. Jay, I'll start off. You had a nice talk with Joe Jordan a couple of weeks ago. And I know you asked him about a couple of different players, and we're going to talk about a couple individual players here. But before I jump into asking your opinion on how some of these guys are doing down on the minor league level, what was your general impression from your conversation with Joe Jordan on how the farm system is right now? Because I know a lot of the guys graduated last year. What was a top five system in baseball is now no longer a top five farm system in baseball, but I think most people believe it's still teeming with a lot of talent. Maybe a lot of it at the lower levels right now. How does Joe Jordan feel about the system as it stands right now?
I mean, Joe or any internal guy is not going to be the type that's going to rank it against the other 29 clubs or anything like that, but he's always going to be excited about his own guys, and there's plenty of guys to be excited about. There's tons of guys that are, you know, having bust out years. There's guys that are, you know, late round picks, you know, names that you don't know that are starting to make their names known at the lower levels, and that's where a lot of excitement's happening right now at the full season Class A Advanced. You're starting to see a couple guys emerge and get promotions early in the season. So Joe's excited. He loves his guys, and you know, one of the guys that he's most excited about, I think you intend to ask me about, Jose Pujols,
yeah,
is an outfielder, and Joe was just busting kind of in the interview. Because he had a really successful year, set the Lakewood Blue Claws record 2 seasons ago in home runs, and then was promoted to high A last year, and didn't do very well. He batted under 200 there, and you know, just had a kind of a really rough and weak season. Then he bounces back this year. The average goes up at Class A Advanced in Clearwater, batted over 100 there. Batted over 300 there. So his average from one season to the next at the same level goes up over 100 points. And I can't remember seeing a guy repeat a level and have his average get hiked by over 100 points. It's super remarkable. And Jose Pujols is just one of those guys that Joe was really busting and excited about.
Yeah, they didn't even protect him in the Rule 5 draft last year. That's where. But I mean, obviously, they spent some money on him when they signed him, and at just 22 years old, I did want to ask you about Pujols, because now that he's up in Reading after doing so well in Clearwater, he's hitting pretty well up in Reading now. It seems as though he's really taken to the next level. What is it that's changed this year? Is it his approach? Is he just more patient at the plate? Has he matured emotionally? What's been the big difference for him this season?
I think it's a little bit of pitch recognition. I think it's maturation. Sean Williams has been his manager 3 seasons running. So Sean Williams, Jimmy Williams' son, had him at Lakewood 2 years ago, and then followed him up, earned a promotion to Clearwater, has been there his second year there this year. So Sean always was really high on him in Lakewood and said that, you know, he saw massive and vast differences in him 2 years ago at Lakewood from the first half of the season. And then he's done kind of repeated the same success at another level. It just took him a lot longer this time. So, he's still striking out a hefty amount. But this is a guy that, you know, Phillies fans should be excited about. He's going to really rip him in Double A, and, righty hitter. Yeah. Right. 22 years old. He's going to enjoy that home park there for Reading. And, you know, hopefully, local fans will start to get to see him, you know, head on out to First Energy Park. Reading's coming through Trenton in a couple of weeks. Go see him there. He's a guy to be excited about. He's a big-time power hitter.
Reading, as we're finding out, you're not too far away from the majors once you make it up to Reading, which kind of leads me to the next guy I wanted to talk about. And I want to talk about the guy that everyone in baseball believes is this team's number one prospect. He's the guy that the Phillies really, I can't imagine involving him in any kind of a trade in the offseason or any time in the near future, and that's, of course, Sixto Sanchez. You know, we talk a lot about him. He finished the year last year in high A, made 5 starts there. He started there again this year in Clearwater, but really he's been injured for most of the season, Jay. Injuries have limited him to just 8 starts this year. He's only logged 46 and two-thirds innings. He's still just 19 years old, and obviously he's got the stuff. We know about the 100-mile-an-hour fastball. We know about the great command, and we know that he's got this pedigree now of being a really young guy who has dominated everywhere he's been. Obviously, the Pedro Martinez comparisons that you hear thrown around every once in a while are really intriguing, and there's a reason he's the organization's number one prospect. But looking at 2018 here, does this just kind of feel like a lost season for Sixto for you?
No, I don't think so. You know, you get a chance for him to somewhat repeat the level, because he got promoted there around this time last year. And in fact, just want to update one of the items you mentioned on him. He turned 20 years old last week.
Okay, all right. I missed the birthday. I wasn't invited. What's that all about? Goodness.
We'll hit him up in the offseason. We'll catch up. We'll hit him down there and catch up with him. But, yeah, I mean, elbow inflammation with him. He missed some time on the disabled list last year, too. I think it was a neck strain at that point. But he's got he had eight good starts. You know, you get to see what he's doing there against a lot older batters, because a lot of the guys that go in that league have college time, or, you know, it's they're a year or two out of the draft even. So he's the youngest. He was, at least, and might still be the youngest pitcher in the league, and still enjoyed success there for a couple months. ERA around 2.5. Opponent's batting average under .225. He had nearly 9 Ks per 9 innings. So, with that age, show him what he could do against plenty of older batters. And he's a guy, I talked to him last year. He told me he grew up admiring Pedro Martinez, and he's actually earned comparisons to that guy. So he's a big command guy, has a big-time fastball. He can really get it done out there. I don't feel like it's a lost season at all. It's a shame that he doesn't get more innings under his belt at that level. But he kind of was dominating there and might not need more innings at that level. He could have been, if he was healthy, at Double-A by now. So that's what you're missing. But at 20 years old, a guy breaking into Double-A, might be too far ahead of himself there. It's fine if he gets there next year. He'll be 20 for most of next season.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. And that was my concern, was I know when he has pitched this year, he has pitched very well, but just 46 2/3 innings. You're obviously hoping to see more of him. You want to see him. You want to see him on the mound more, and maybe get that promotion to Reading, because that obviously accelerates his timeline to getting to Philadelphia at some point in the next couple of years. When do they expect him back? Are they going to try and get him back in a starting rotation here? Because I know the minor league season ends in August. I mean, there's only a couple of weeks left. Is he going to be able to get any more game action here in the minors this year?
I mean, Joe Jordan, I talked to him midweek last week after the length of your interview, just to try to I was, in fact, pestering him to try to get some updates on Sixto, and he kind of fessed up that they were hoping to get him some action by late August. So typically he may not jump right into action with the Threshers. That might be more likely some Gulf Coast League rookie-level short season outings, just to, you know, notch some innings. But, you know, the Phillies can get creative with guys that are injured that miss time to get them some extra innings or playing time. Some of those things might include the Florida Instructional League. They could very well. I don't know that Sixto, as valuable and seemingly fragile he's been this year, I don't know how much of a candidate he would be for this. But there's off-season leagues that they send loads of guys to, so he could always get some innings that way. There's creative ways that they can get him some experience here, before the year's out.
Yeah, I saw a couple of different places, some rumblings about maybe the Arizona Fall League for him. I can't imagine the Phillies are publicly committing to that one way or the other right now. But obviously, we want to see Sixto we just want to see him pitch. I don't even really care what level. I just love watching the highlights when they come across Twitter, watching that guy twirl, man. It's something else. Let's talk about the number one overall pick from a couple of years ago, Mickey Moniak. I know we're so quick to turn on young players, and Moniak obviously really struggled last year. He struggled for a good part of this year. He is still in Clearwater, but as of late, it seems as though he's been kind of turning things around a little bit. He's been slugging the ball a little bit better. He's been getting on base. He's been walking more. What have you heard about Moniak's development in Clearwater over the last few weeks?
Well, I mean, he's the guy that obviously fans would be most interested in, maybe outside of Sixto. As far as feedback I get on the social networking sites and platforms, more comments are related to Moniak than probably any other positional guy. But he started the year, and after a month in the Florida State League, which is Class A Advanced again, he was the fifth youngest guy in that league that wasn't Sixto, and a 20-year-old guy in that league. So, yeah, I mean, should a 20-year-old guy be busting out and crushing it at that level? Most commonly, no. But, you know, if you take away the struggles that he had in April, he batted .213 in April, had an OPS under .500 in April. If you take that away, he's doing pretty well. He's got a .274 average since then, 700-ish OPS since then, which, you know, 700's okay. Not crushing it, okay. But 700's good, really good for a 20-year-old playing against a lot older competition. I'll take that. And, you know, second half overall, batting 267 with the OPS, you know, creeping up on 770. So, hey, you know, Mickey Moniak's a guy with high expectations because of that draft spot, but don't blame that guy for where the Phillies draft him. Give the heat to the team if you want, but lay off the kid on Twitter. Stop tagging his handle. Stop griping at him. He's doing what he can, and he is developing. He's coming along, and Phillies fans should be patient. He's still a very young guy.
Yeah, I think we see Juan Soto and we see Ronald Acuna and we think, why can't our number one overall pick ascend that quickly? And they're just different players. I mean, Mickey Moniak is never going to be that guy. It was a draft in which there was no clear number one. There was no one as talented as Juan Soto or Ronald Acuna or even somebody even close to that. So Mickey Moniak goes number one overall. In most drafts, he probably doesn't go that high. You know, maybe so. It definitely colors expectations a little bit when you're talking about the number one overall pick in the draft. But it is good to see him slowly starting to turn it around. And like you mentioned, very young for the league. A guy who's not young for the league, but also seems to be playing really well now, especially since he was promoted to Double A, is Adam Haseley. Last year's number one pick, not number one overall, but the Phillies' first round pick last year, has been really solid since coming to Reading as well. And I know Reading is an offensive ballpark, but Haseley obviously earned a promotion from Clearwater to Reading, and he's carried it through to Double A as well. Tell me a little bit about what you're hearing about Haseley down in Reading.
Haseley's really good, man. He's a guy that plays harder than your average guy. He's you know, one of the first guys there. He's always behind the scenes doing work. You know, some guys might take breaks, might play cards, might have, you know, lengthier time to eat their pre or post game meal. Well, he's a guy that's, you know, studying you know, stats, analytics, shifts, percentages. He's a guy that's working harder than most behind the scenes. So Phillies fans are going to like this guy, and I think I already do. He's 22 years old. He's already at Double A, lefty batter, outfield guy. He's eighth overall pick last year by the Phillies, and he's having some success. Some of that success can be attributed to the home park. He's got some favorable home numbers versus his road splits, where you got a home OPS over 1,100. And his road OPS right now at Double A, around 628, I think. So
that's a difference. that's a difference.
But he's only 25 games into his Double A career. He's been there a month or so. It's small sample size. You can kind of, you know, look at it that way. But he had great numbers at Clearwater. High there with the Florida State League, 79 games. He batted 300. Was definitely deserving of a promotion. He's not the guy that's hitting with the most power. But I think he's a guy, one of those guys that, you know, he can have moderate power in the minors, but then really comes out once he fully matures. And some coaches that I know in the Philly system will call it man strength. When he gets his man strength and he matures and he puts some pounds on and he starts to, you know, eat and play like a major leaguer, that power might come in a little bit later. So Haseley's a talented individual. He's a good hitter, and he's really shown what he's made of this year.
Another guy I wanted to mention who's been talked about a lot lately is Kyle Dohey. He's been kind of rocketing up some Phil's prospect lists. Left-handed reliever for the where is he right now too? Is he in Clearwater as well? Right?
Double A.
Double A. He's in Reading too. Okay, that's right. Yeah, he earned a promotion recently. What? And I know you talked to Joe Jordan about him in your interview, how fast Dohey rose. And he was a guy like Pujols who also struggled last year, but has really come into his own this year. What is it about Dohey that the team likes so much? I mean, it seems like his stuff is pretty electric.
Yeah, he added some miles per hour this year. So, you know, you get a guy that goes from 89 to 91, and now, like, 91 is the low side. He's touching mid-90s, 94s, and things like that. He's really shining this year. He's succeeded through three levels or progressed through three levels this year. Started out at Lakewood, was their setup guy there through the first half of the season, was a midseason all-star there. And since that third week of June, he's you know, risen two more levels. So Dohey is the more correct way to pronounce it. 21 years old. He's 16th rounder last year. Like you mentioned, a lefty reliever. He's absolutely the bust-out prospect in the system this year. So he's pitched three levels this year, through eight games at Reading. He's got a 3.86 ERA. He's got 16 Ks. The control hasn't been there where it was at the 2A levels this year. He's walked 11 guys. and 11 and two-thirds. So maybe a little nerves there, maybe a little, you know, guys working to count there better than they do at the A levels. But hitters have only posted averages under 150 at all three levels against him this year. He's a bust-out guy this year for the Phillies. Fans should start learning this guy's name, Kyle Doughy. Mid-90s fastball, nice secondary pitches, really excellent variance with his change as far as miles per hour goes. And he's got an excellent curveball with a lot of movement there. So very talented up-and-coming reliever, Kyle Doughy, the bust-out name this year. The other bust-out name, I think, for lefty relievers, if folks are interested, Tyler Gilbert made it up to AAA. He was a sixth-round pick from 3 years ago. He's had a little bit of a slower ascent. You know, over his few years, he spent full years pretty much at the three levels preceding AAA. But he's been a really quality guy, talented reliever, another lefty guy, 24-year-old that Phillies fans should be aware of, Tyler Gilbert as well.
I wonder if these are two guys who are going to get September call-ups and maybe help during a pennant run, because I know neither of those guys are on the 40-man roster, so obviously that factors into it. But if this team, if the acquisition they made at the trade deadline, if Loop doesn't perform well, and Austin Davis has been pretty good since he's been called up, so it may not necessarily be something they have to add. But do you think there's a possibility either one of those guys could be a September call-up up and contribute in a pennant race for the Phillies, even if it's just, you know, a random game here and there?
Sure. I mean, if there's a need, if somebody gets injured and you can have the ability to open up a 40-man spot, I think Gilbert's the guy that's deserving, just being the elder of the two. He'd be a guy that they might lean on first before Doughy. But yeah, I mean, both of these guys should be in big league camp next year, and they'll be, you know, prominent names. Lefty relievers are always super valuable, so yeah. If they both hang around and they don't end up in trades over the offseason, because I feel like Phillies are going to be dealers that way, and a lot of these guys, Jose Pujols, some of these relievers, some of these pitchers, it might be valuable chips for you. You know, if they're still around next year, they'll be names worth knowing for sure.
Yeah, and Adonis Medina is another guy who was mentioned. We heard rumored in a Manny Machado deal at the trade deadline. So certainly they have a lot of capital, even if they don't have one of the top 10 farm systems in baseball anymore. But one of the guys I know you wanted to talk about is a guy at Lakewood named Spencer Howard. Tell us a little bit about Spencer, because I don't know a lot about him.
Well, I mean, we talk about the first rounders that everybody knows. The second round's not too far behind that. So Spencer was the Phillies' second-round pick last year. He's a 22-year-old righty hurler, starter for the Blue Claws this year. Not too much of an impact over the first half of the season, because the Blue Claws had so many dominant guys in their rotation this year. Their pitching staff's been leading the league in ERA for pretty much the entire season. They won the first half division. They're leading the second half division standing, so they're already in the playoffs. And leading the second half standings, even though they don't need to, their pitching is dominant. And Spencer Howard kind of, you know, was in the weeds, laying unrecognized for a while. But the second half, he's really torn it up. So through, you know, past eight outings, he's 4-1, 2.72 ERA. Opponents are batting just 185 against him since the All-Star break. He's averaging over 10.5 Ks per nine. So I saw him last week in a day game, or maybe the week before in a day game out in Lakewood. He's got a fastball that creeps up to 97 and 98 regularly, frequently even. He's got a great changeup, and he's got an outstanding cutter and a curveball to throw in the mix as well. So while people are focusing on those early-round picks, don't forget about those second-rounders. Spencer Howard's a name to know, and he's been proven why with the Blue Claws the past couple months here.
Yeah, the Phillies have had some luck with second-round guys, and that's an interesting name to listen for. Hopefully he'll make it up to Clearwater next year, and we'll see him on the move. I want to throw one last question at you, Jay. We heard a lot about the Phillies being buyers at the trade deadline back in July, and obviously if they make a deal in August, they're not going to deal one of their Uber prospects. But are there any guys that you absolutely would not trade? I mean, unless you're dealing for something like Mike Trout or something like that, is there anyone you absolutely would not let go of unless it was under the most extreme circumstances, I guess I'll say?
No, I mean, look, right now the Phillies are back in a position that they were in the middle of that 5-year division title run. They've got, you know, even better spot because you don't have so much money committed. You got all this money to spend and all this freedom to bring in top names, top dollar guys, top salary guys. So, look, if you can get somebody and you can put together those familiar packages of Kyle Drabecks and Travis Darnos, and you can put all those guys together to get you an ace, a big-time name, somebody that's going to end up on that Wall of Fame in a handful of years, do it. I know everybody says don't trade six, though. But look, the guy's 20. The guy's been injured two straight years. Prospects are prospects for a reason. He's compared to Pedro Martinez. He's not Pedro Martinez yet. So look, I know people say don't trade Sixto, and he's the one you got to hold on to. Everybody on the board in my book is available for the right name.
And I got to tell you, that I really appreciate you saying that. That from a guy who covers the minors. I know a lot of guys like you who cover the minors and make that your work and your life. You're very protective of those guys. And I think a lot of prospect guys, they might be more likely to want to hold on to more guys. So it's refreshing to hear that take, Jay. I appreciate that. And everybody, make sure that you're reading Jay's work. Go to foulballs.com, foulballz. Read Jay's website and follow Jay on Twitter at Foulballs. Jay Floyd, thank you so much for coming back on Hitting Season, man. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Nice to be on the show with the new name.
Thanks, buddy.
This ball is out of here.
Well, one last thing before we get out of here for this week. I did this a couple of weeks ago and didn't get a chance to do it with Paul Boyer when he was on the show with me last week because we were talking about the trade deadline. It didn't really fit into the structure of the show, but one of the things I've been wanting to do is, as we're kind of nearing the pennant race, give you the Hitting Season top 10. And we saw a bunch of different power rankings this week, one of which had the Phillies up at number 5. Look, I love the Phillies. 5 is too high. The MLB.com power rankings had the Phillies at 5, and this was right after their sweep of the Marlins. There's no way the Phillies are the fifth best team in baseball, the fifth hottest team in baseball. They're just not there. I think that they certainly should be in the consideration for being a top 10 team. ESPN.com did not have them in the top 10, whereas USA Today had them at number 10. Here is my Hitting Season top 10 list. I am moving the Astros down one spot. I'm putting the Boston Red Sox up at number 1. At this point, I just don't see how you can argue that the Red Sox, even though we saw them in Boston a couple weeks ago, and really the Phillies pitching shut that team down and the Phillies split that series. The Boston Red Sox offense really is ridiculous. And when they get Chris Sale back, they're going to coast to the American League East title. They're on pace to win 113 games this year. That's a staggering number of wins. They could very well set the Major League record for wins this year. I think they still have to beat the Seattle Mariners record from back in 2001, but they're going to challenge it. If they stay hot like this, they are absolutely going to challenge it. They may not be able to stay up for it because they are going to have such a big lead in the American League East, but Boston is absolutely a monster, the number one team in baseball. I still have the Houston Astros at number 2. Still like that team. They're dealing with a lot of injuries, but Carlos Correa is going to be back soon. Alex Bregman has emerged as a true stud superstar in the game, and that pitching staff is still just as dominant as it has ever been. The bullpen is a big problem for them. This Roberto Osuna nonsense going on in the ninth inning, it just feels like a black cloud hanging over that ninth inning for that team. You just get the feeling that in the postseason, the Astros are going to lose a couple of crushing games in the ninth inning. But for right now, looking at the regular season, I have the Astros at number 2. I have the Yankees at number 3. Despite getting swept by Boston and being relegated to being a wild card team, I still think the Yankees are a 100-win team. You know, and they're very, very good, but they're dealing with some injury issues as well. Aaron Judge, 3 weeks after breaking his wrist with a slight fracture in his hand, still does not feel strong enough to swing a bat. He's a long ways away yet. The Yankees have some problems. They absolutely have some problems, and don't look now, but the Oakland A's could be ready to catch the Yankees and pass them for the number one spot for the number one wild card spot. I have the Oakland A's at number four. That's a fun team. They're pitching pretty well. They're hitting the cover off the ball. And every few years or so, it seems like the Oakland A's just kind of pop up out of nowhere and are a team that just threatens and scares the hell out of everybody. And that's where they are again this year. It'd be fun to see the Oakland A's go far. I always have a soft spot in my heart for the A's. Maybe it's because of their old ties to Philadelphia. I don't know what it is, but Chris Davis and Matt Olson, and their third baseman, Matt Chapman, has emerged as a potential American League MVP candidate. That dude is absolutely off the chain. So the Oakland A's at number four. I have the Cubs at number five. Hope the Cubs do some work this weekend against the Nationals. I got the Cleveland Indians at number six. That team is just on cruise control to win the American League Central. I have the Arizona Diamondbacks. I was very impressed by them this week. They have some horses. I got them at number seven, ahead of the Dodgers at number eight. I have the Milwaukee Brewers at number nine. And I have your Philadelphia Phillies ahead of the Atlanta Braves at number 10. I think the Braves are right behind the Phillies at 11. I know the Phillies have a one-game lead on Atlanta, but Atlanta also has a much better run differential than Philadelphia. And they've won the season series against the Phillies. This is probably a little bit of homerish bias, but you can argue the Phillies are the team that's in first place. They've been in first place for a month now over the Atlanta Braves. It's just a one-game lead. I do know that, but it's my dadgum show. It's my top 10 list, and I'm putting the Philadelphia Phillies in the top 10 over the Atlanta Braves in the number 10 spot. But again, certainly subject to change by the time we do this again next week.
This ball is out of here!
And now it's time for your stat of the week. Today is the one-year anniversary of Rhys Hoskins' call-up. That's right. As I'm recording this on Thursday, it is the one-year anniversary of Rhys Hoskins' call-up. Over the past calendar year, here is how Rhys Hoskins stacks up. And these were notes that were sent along by our good friend Matt Winkleman. He has hit 40 home runs in the 1 year since he's been called up, tied for 12th in the majors. He has 120 RBIs, fifth most in baseball. A walk rate of 15.4%, that is 7th best in baseball. An isolated power of 281, that is 10th best. And a weighted runs created of 142, which is tied for 12th. Some of the other hitters around him in weighted runs created, Joey Votto, Chris Bryant, Eugenio Suarez, Alex Bregman, and Giancarlo Stanton. Not bad company you're keeping, Rhys Hoskins. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thank you so much for listening to episode number 203. I appreciate it very much. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to this podcast over at Apple Podcasts and leave a review while you're there. If you like the show, a 5-star rating would certainly help. And tell your friends, as the Phillies are in a pennant race, if they're looking for a good podcast, tell them about Hittin' Season. Tell them where to go to find it. Also, send them on over to the Patreon. Tell them to become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season. Go to patreon.com/Hittin' Season. Get an extra episode of Hittin' Season every week and another Phillies podcast called Continued Success in the middle of the week. You will not be disappointed. Sign up on that $5 tier. It's money well spent, folks. We work really hard to give you some great Phillies content all during the week. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.